Blue Paw sighed, feeling some of the tension unknot from her belly. She wasn't just a scaredy mouse after all. Suddenly tired, she settled down in her nest and yawned. Thanks for the moss, Moonflower. Snowpaw was circling in hers. It's so soft. It should keep you warm, Moonflower meowed. After the battle, we'll go out and collect more and make sure both your nests are as soft as feathers. Blue Paw closed her eyes. She imagined herself padding through the woods beside Snowpaw and Moonflower, the battle far behind and nothing to worry about but where to find the softest moss. The thought soothed her. I'll just lie down between you two while you go to sleep. Moonflower settled on her belly between the two nests. Blue Paw could hear Snowpaw's breath slowing as Moonflower purred gently. Rolling toward the warmth of her mother, she felt Moonflower's soft belly fur brush her pelt and smelled the familiar scent that reminded her of the moon spent in the nursery. Happily, she drifted into sleep. Half waking, she felt Moonflower stir. Blinking in the moonlight, she saw Leopard Paw and Patch Paw asleep in their nests. It must be late. Moonflower got to her paws. Sleep well, little one. The queen's breath stirred Blue Paw's ear fur. I will always be with you. The ferns rustled, and Moonflower was gone. My name is Spencer Grant, and you're listening to Four Trees, a Warrior Cats community podcast. Last week, I was joined by my dear best friend in the world, Silver, Silverleaf, I should say. That's his warrior name, to discuss the book Blue Star's Prophecy. We talked a lot about its themes regarding motherhood, regarding your relationship to the clan, and regarding just the Warrior Cats world in general, and also the deal with Oakheart, because that was kind of weird. So if you're interested in that discussion and you haven't heard it already, I would suggest listening to that before listening to this one, just so you may have a better idea of what we're on about and catch any jokes or references we started in the previous episode. Each episode of this show is only around half an hour, so it's not setting you back that much time, I promise. And also, Silverleaf is a really good guest. Like, for real, my dude had a lot of great insights and all kinds of crazy stuff that he can talk about that I don't know anything about, and it was really exciting to hear about his thoughts on this book and his thoughts on the Warrior Cats world in general. So yeah, it was a good episode, and this one is going to be a good episode too, because we do talk about trees a whole bunch, which he has a lot of opinions and thoughts on. So yeah, if you're interested in that, well, you're in for a good time. And let's get started back into the discussion. Okay, I know you are really into plants, to put it lightly. Do you want to talk about the medicine cat stuff?
So I have a bunch of notes, and it's literally just a list of a whole bunch of stuff that gets mentioned, including some... Oh, wait, I have to Google something real fast, because I forgot to Google this ahead of time.
I will, I guess, list out the stuff that I've noticed from the last few books. So, there are cobwebs for wounds and bleeding, goldenrod poultice for wounds, poppy seeds for pain. That one makes sense to me, because I know it's an opiate. Uh-huh. Marigold leaves or horsetail to stave off infection. Wild garlic draws out poison and repels vampires. Mouse bile keeps ticks away. Colt's foot is good for a cough. Feverfew and lavender help with a cold, which I assume is, they call it a chill. I assume it's like a cold or a pneumonia or hypothermia or something like that. Yarrow ointment helps soften paw pads and encourage healing. Yarrow also induces vomiting, so it's good for poison. There's burdock root for rat bites. Death berries cause instant death. They are bright red, round, and look juicy. Crushed ragwort leaves and juniper berries make a poultice for aching joints. Borage helps induce lactation. Stomach aches can be helped with watermint or juniper berries. Juniper is also mentioned to be used in eye treatments for a cat with scratched out eyes. Juniper berries also apparently help with strength. I think there was comfy for bones. Raspberry leaves for the pregnancy, which was in this book. tansy leaves for infection, which is also in this book, horsetail sap to stop bleeding, dock leaves for soreness, nettle for swelling, thyme for shock. Foxglove does something, but they don't say what. Chamomile can soothe heart pain, but no herb can heal a broken heart. And that was the end of my list. That's a thing that they say. Is your Google done?
Yes. I was looking up lichen structures.
Beautiful.
I'm going to talk about lichen for a
minute.
Please do. There's a lot of plants around the ThunderClan camp, obviously. And one of the ones that I thought was very interesting is that there seems to be a barrier of lichen over the leader's den. Mm-hmm. And as a kid, I was only ever familiar with certain forms of lichen, specifically the kind that grows on trees, which is a foliose form of lichen. It's very flat. It's kind of crumbly, and it's usually like in circles. These lichens are, there are tons of different species of lichen that take on all different kinds of forms, and they live everywhere. Lichen are everywhere because they are basically the first forms of life that come in a successionary ecosystem, and they switch out to different kinds of lichen as the ecosystem proceeds through successionary measures, but they never leave completely because they're great at breaking down stuff.
So when you say successionary ecosystem, what exactly do you mean by that?
Succession is the process of how an ecosystem builds itself. So primary succession is, assuming that I remember that there's not a base level that I'm misremembering, that is bare rock. An ecosystem starts as bare rock. There's nothing living on it. Something comes in, and it's usually lichen, because lichen is very well adapted to this kind of thing because of what it is. It's effectively a mix of a single organism symbiont kind of thing between fungi and algae that trade resources and stuff, so that they're very effective at living on anything. So it starts as bare rock, and then that bare rock gets broken down by these lichen and then like moss. And then once they have done enough breaking down, you get into secondary succession, which is usually things like grasses. Then tertiary succession, you start having bigger organisms such as bushes or small pine trees to medium-sized pine trees. And then as you go up and up, you eventually get to the, I forget the word for it, but the ultimate, the climax ecosystem.
Nice.
Which in the typical model, it depends on where you are, what is the actual climax ecosystem. But in the typical model, it is hardwood forest.
I remember reading at one point that birch trees are usually the first ones to grow back after a forest fire. Would that be considered an example of some kind of succession in an ecosystem?
Yes, it is. So succession is, it doesn't have to start all the way at the beginning. Sometimes things like fire or other natural disasters come in and they knock it down a few pegs. So like birch trees or softwood pines.
Let's not call fire a natural disaster, otherwise we wouldn't have SkyClan. Come on.
We are calling fire a natural disaster because even though plenty of ecosystems depend on fire, that's the simplest way to refer to it as, and humans typically don't like being burned alive.
That's fair.
So they'll typically knock it back from a climax ecosystem to something maybe one or two steps lower. Like maybe there'll still be bushes around, but there aren't any big trees anymore, and those big trees have to come grow back. Mm-hmm. It's sometimes you don't want a climax ecosystem because in places that historically...
So you wouldn't want a climactic ecosystem, presumably because the ecosystem gets off on denial.
Okay, I just heard that. I knocked my headphones out. I don't want to know what you said before that. I don't want to know. Gets off on denial is not a phrase that I want any context for, ever. But I will make fun of you for saying. So, where was I? I got distracted.
You don't necessarily want a climax.
You don't necessarily want a climax ecosystem in places that are historically dependent on fire, because it is... those kinds of climax ecosystems are very often just stands of pines that don't let anything else grow. Mm-hmm. So you get like a singular species in a very large area. And these pines normally burn down, allowing for nutrients to then cycle back into the environment and for new things to grow. And that's why periodic fire is good.
All right. So yeah, lichens.
this has gotten very off track from...
No, I'm so happy to learn more. And I'm sure anybody who's still listening to this podcast has got to be, right? Because we've been going on...
Warrior cats ecology, baby.
Yeah.
So lichens. The lichen that's in that hangs in front is very likely a fruticose lichen of some kind.
Okay.
Lichens suck to identify because they're just a mess. And honestly, if you don't have a lot of information, you can't just identify it beyond, oh, this is probably a fruticose lichen, because that's a general sort of descriptor, not a... Different shapes of lichen are definitely not necessarily related. So there's this fruticose lichen hanging in front of the den, and that's the only point that I wanted to make here.
Okay, thank you.
I can't remember if there was anything else. I think that's it. I just wanted to talk about that.
So what do you think about the medicine cat, like remedies? Because that is what initially got you interested in this. Are there any that you would like to comment on, make sense to you, explain a little bit?
I don't know a lot about the specific applications of a lot of these things. Mm-hmm. However, I do know that Cuban people, have been making all of these different kinds of remedies from things like this for a long time. And I would put money on these being based off of human remedies and not ones for cats, which is debatably maybe not a good idea. Don't necessarily try to feed your cat random leaves that you find in the woods.
Your cat is, if your cat is out in the woods, it'll probably eat those random leaves
itself.
Don't
feed your cat leaves. They're an obligate carnivore. Don't let your cats outside. Yeah, outdoor cats are bad, actually.
Yeah, that's the point I was trying to make. If your cat goes outside and sees some death berries, your cat is going to be like, juicy. Is me a cat?
Your cat
that looks like
will
me.
Mess up the local ecosystem so bad. Don't have outdoor cats.
And if you do have a cat and it is pregnant, maybe find something a little better for it than raspberry leaves.
Take your cat to the vet. They know what they're doing.
Yeah, they have medical grade raspberry leaves at the veterinary office. Okay. Have you got any thoughts about like the various trees that we hear about? Because you did text me a very angry thing about
a certain kind of wood.
And I read it aloud to a friend that I was with, and somebody overheard the conversation and got angry.
What? So, there is this very important concept, especially in botany, where a lot of people look at plants and they just see green, about effective communication. There is a tree in the book described as the Great Sycamore. And then, 30 seconds later, next page, they describe the sycamore pods as what are effectively maple pods. And it took me too long. I was so mad about this because the sycamore that I'm familiar with is the American sycamore. Mm-hmm. And the only thing that are actually called sycamores in the sycamore family live exclusively in North America. There are other related tree species that live in other places, but there's a different name. I think they're called planes, if I'm remembering correctly, maybe something else if I'm not, but that's fine. But the only ones that are actually called sycamores are, there's the American sycamore, there's the Californian sycamore, there is a sycamore that is either called a sycamore or a plane in Mexico, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And sycamore pods are spiky, they are round, they are nothing like maple, and it turns out that the British decide to call their local maple of the Acer genus, which is entirely unrelated to actual sycamores. They just call it a sycamore. It's only called a sycamore maple, which is a reasonable thing to call it because, look, names overlap. There's like the cypress vine and the cypress, which are entirely unrelated. One's a flowering plant, one's a conifer, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And like, that's fine. But you don't just call a cypress vine a cypress. That's an entirely different thing. And so calling a maple just sycamore is a very ineffective tool at communicating your ideas in a field that already has a lot of people confused about, oh, but that's a plant, right? It's green. And I got so mad about this. Maybe, I got so very mad about this.
Maybe in the U.S. we just call maples sycamores. You ever think about
that? You better not.
You ever think?
From what I could tell, it's exclusively this tree. It's exclusively the sycamore maple.
If the word derived before we discovered actual sycamores, there's like a likelihood that people in the UK had a tree that they called sycamore, and then later on the name got applied to some other trees that were endemic to North America, and they just didn't bother to disassociate the other word because, you know, who cares? The plant is green.
I'm so mad about this.
I understand.
Understandable to call it a sycamore maple. That happens. I get it. But you can't just call it a sycamore and then have it not be a sycamore. They branch at the eudicot level, which is pretty far back. It's not like they're still both flowering plants, mm-hmm. but they branch off pretty quickly after you get beyond the general consensus of flowering plant. They're barely related at all.
I'm so sorry that you have to put up with the British.
I hate the British.
A great shame.
Spiteful and, towards the British.
You have my utmost sympathies and consolations. I can personally understand that to a high degree. I will say
it's just
that, like,
a maple. Just call it a maple.
The cat linguistics in this book definitely caught my eye because I've been reading like all the other ones, and there was like, I don't know, the way that they talk in this book is really different to the way that the cats talk in the original arc.
Is it?
Yeah, like there is probably something to do with the fact that like by the time they finished Blue Star's Prophecy, they had already finished the entire Power of Three, which is the third arc. So like this book was in like 2009 or something. Obama was president, it was a different time, and like maybe they were just like they had already found different words to describe things for cats, and they didn't feel the need to go back to the kind of words that they used in the first arc. But like they Bluefur seems very fond of like a few words. She uses the phrase stung like fury to refer to an injury multiple times on independent occasions. And the cats are like talking about how they're always mooning over, you know, Snowfur is always mooning over Thistleclaw. And I'm like, they didn't say that at all. And she also, like, every time a cat like runs fast, they say haired. And I'm like, I picked up on that because like in the first few books, they called it sprinting. And I was thinking about like, you know, they're thinking about some parallels to like, you know, in English language. In human languages, words do come in and out of fashion as generations come and go. So like maybe if I do get to Power of Three, you know, I start reading these words and I'm like, oh, okay. So, you know, I guess that was maybe it like skipped a generation or something. I don't know. Like it just got me thinking about cat linguistics a little bit. Because, like, you know, in I don't know, in, like, the 1950s, 1960s, people used to call sunglasses cheaters. And if I were to put on a pair of sunglasses, strut around town, somebody said, hey, nice cheaters, I probably would not understand what they meant unless I was one of the very few people with specific knowledge that at some point in the last, you know, 70 years, sunglasses were called cheaters in colloquial conversations. Huh. Presumably the idea being that, like, they helped you cheat in cards or something like that. But you know, words do come in and out of fashion. Okay used to be all correct, and then we shortened it to okay, and it was also spelled wrong because the people who were doing that was like fashionable at the time. And then people stopped spelling things wrong because that became fashionable, and now we're spelling things wrong again. And it's beautiful. It's the best part of language. But I don't know. It just like when I was reading about the way that these cats talk, and like, you know, she keeps saying arrogant. She keeps describing things and people as being arrogant. And I can't tell to what extent that's just because she happens to have a lot of arrogant people in her life.
She describes so many people as arrogant.
Yeah, she's always regularly. Like, God, Thistleclaw, he's so arrogant and arrogant. And I'm
Come
really tired of how arrogant
word,
he is.
Man.
Yeah.
There are like, other there are words, better Mom. And more specific words to arrogant because you use the same words to describe proto-cat fascism as you do to describe that. Oh, I can't use that word.
He's a tiger claw?
No, I'm not. I'm talking about Oakheart.
Oh, I see. What, a hunk? Smoking hunk of a guy?
I'm just going to say it and you can bleep it out.
All right.
Oakheart is a boy.
Oh, I see. I'm sure there's like a warrior cats adjacent word for that. Like, oh, he's a mouse whisperer, you know?
He's always I hate whispering. That. Why would you say that with your human mouth?
Would you rather I say that with my non-human mouth?
Yes!
Okay.
Say that in cat noises. Do it. Do it, coward.
Nya?
Oh, I hate that. That's
I want you to know I did the hand motion.
Do you not mimic cat noises for the cats in your life?
I do. Generally, I like to talk to them as though they're human beings, and it's just that, like, my voice goes up several octaves so that they can understand. Or they'll be like, bonjour, comment allez-vous, or something like that. Because I don't know if the cats around here speak English sometimes. You gotta talk to them in French.
You gotta mimic their noises back at them.
Yeah, like...
Like, if your cat murps at you, you murp back. Yeah! It's polite. No.
I haven't had a cat that, like, squeaked at me for so long. Like, there was a kitty that I used to interact with on the daily, and I pass by, and I say, hi, baby! Hi, baby, hi! Bonjour, ça va? And the cat would go, ah! Or it would go, like... It sounded like if you were, like, pressing on a squeak toy. It would, like... Like that, I don't know. I don't know how to make the onomatopoeia with my mouth.
I don't even have especially noisy cats in my life, but my cat, Toki, he screams at me when he wants something, and that something is usually food. And so we'll go back and forth for like as long as it takes me to put food in his bowl of just like, mwah, mwah, me mimicking his noises back at him. And beautiful. I don't know what he thinks about it, but I think it's hilarious.
I used to have a very talkative cat called Vincent, and we would do that all the time. Or, like, we'd trade off. Sometimes I could, like, actually get him to duet with me. Like, mm-hmm. I would be, we'd be doing some musical theater in my living room. I know, a big surprise. I like musical theater. I never done it. But I'd be doing musical theater, and, like, if it was a song with, like, I could just hand the microphone over to him, and he would do his meow, and I'd come back, and it was just beautiful. I have some videos, aww, I think, of it. That's adorable. Good guy. So, like, we'd either do that or I would talk to him like a human and be like, yo, Vincent, who are you going to vote for? And you going to vote to recall Aaron Persky? Because, like, I really hate that guy, man. He was a bad judge. He showed clear bias towards his white constituents. That's kind of messed up, huh? And he would go, meow. And I would be like, yeah, I agree. Hey, it's good that we had this talk.
I will either talk to my cat like he's a human being, or I will send so many curse words his way. I curse at my cat regularly, but in, like, the very fond way. Of, like, oh, this is said with love. But also he commits so many crimes. Not war crimes, though, unlike all of the cats in this book.
Not all of them. I don't think Snowpaw committed any war crimes.
Snowpaw was complicit in the war crimes and would be tried as such.
Okay, that's fair. What about Oakheart? Did Oakheart commit any war crimes?
He committed the crime of having no taste and being the obligatory heterosexual romance.
I would say that the cats that fall in love with Blue Star, because there are two of them in this book, the cats that fall in love with Blue Star have impeccable taste.
Look, Blue Star is great, but when you are falling in love with anyone that you've met one time. Yeah, I don't think he's even met her, like, before
that's
this either.
That's
he's
fair,
just thirsting
yeah.
after her for no good
he's,
reason.
He's straight up. It's just like, if it was the other way around, you'd call him a brony friendzoni.
Why would you say those words?
I was thinking about, like, the brony friendzoni thing, because there is the other cat in this book that we brushed
Thrush
over
Pelt.
While we were talking about. Yeah, Thrushpelt. His name implies a yeast infection, and I don't like thinking about it.
But anyway, Thrushpelt is effectively friend-zoned by Blue Star, but, like, in the chill way about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, he has so much honor. He's the best,
like,
cat.
He's just a genuinely good dude. He offers to let Blue Fur say that he's the father of her kits when she's pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
Because you know she can't admit to who the actual father is with the choices
she cannot. That
she'd made.
Everybody would have her. Not even on a question of, like, you broke the warrior code, but it's like, really? Oakheart? Oakheart the cat from the
you
meetings?
Have no taste?
You called him arrogant, like, 20 times? Yeah, it's because she doesn't know any other adjectives. Oh, right, yeah.
He's, like, a genuinely good dude about it. Like, it's never with any sense of, I want something from you from this. No, he wants her to be happy, and he wants the best. Legitimately, he just wants the best for her. And I think it's implied that they become very good friends through the years. Mm-hmm. And, like, he's very clearly...
He keeps her secret to his death. Like, what a guy. Find yourself a man like Threshpelt.
I care about him.
Yeah,
he deserves. He deserves better. And, like, completely understand why he never tried to take another mate. Because he liked her, and he didn't like anyone else. And that's okay.
I mean, if my other option was Rosetail, whose entire function in this book is to be a bad friend to Blue Star. Like, all she ever does is like
the clan gossip.
Why does she hang out with Rosetail so much if all Rosetail does is try to, like, prey on her men? Like, at the gathering where Blue first sees Oakheart for the first time and they're both grown-ups, she's like, oh my god, that Oakheart, he's so handsome. I wish ThunderClan Cat had a cat like that.
Yeah.
Like, back off, lady.
Bluefur is not the only one who thirsts after Oakheart for seemingly no reason.
He's just got a certain je ne sais quoi.
He's got those cat pheromones, I guess.
I guess pheromones are probably like a relatively powerful thing in warrior cats, like, canon. It would explain so many of the bad decisions.
It's a mess. I don't like
Oakheart. The spotted leaf thing. If that was all just, like, the fact that they come from very genetically diverse backgrounds, and it just so happens that their immune systems were a good match, like, I get it. I would stop being angry about the idea that Spotted Leaf considers Firestar a viable romance option, despite the fact that he was, like, Anakin Skywalker age by the time she met him.
So that's another reason that I think it would be really interesting to see the clans be, like, less completely antagonistic. There's, like, 20 cats in each clan. That's not a viable size for a genetic population.
Absolutely not!
It's not! Like, that will result in inbreeding so fast. And I get that that's because it's a book, and because theoretically you can't go over every single cat. Mm-hmm. But, like, even if there were, like, 100 cats per clan, that's still not significant enough. Exactly. That would be if you pooled everyone. And, like, I think
and
if
everybody
this was the
had,
case,
like, a perfect, you know, like, person from the other side of the world that they were getting with. Like, these cats are,
like,
all
if
related.
You went with 400 cats, I think that's a reasonable number to say that that could sustain a genetically diverse population and be fine. Especially with the occasional intermixing from kitty pets, because you know they get it on.
Yeah.
Occasionally. Yeah. I think that that could be another topic that could be explored as a reason for the clans getting along better. Mm-hmm. And I also, I think there would have to be, like, explicit rules on who went where if you... Because obviously I think that even in this case, clan loyalties would still be a thing. And it would be like, who goes where? And it would probably be either the male comes over to the mother's clan, or the kits stay with the mother, and that's it. Unless the mother was very interested in going over to the father's clan, which I think would be an option, but generally not one that's picked.
Mm-hmm. It would be an interesting wrinkle.
It would be an interesting thing, a topic to discuss. But that's not the case, because the clans still hate each other, and they're going to get so inbred.
I always figured that, to some extent, there was, like, I don't know, the cats that we meet are in a way an abstraction. Like, every one cat represents, I don't know, like, 10 or something like that. And it just happens that these are the important cats in their lives. And there are more, it's just that they're never shown. But I don't know how supported that is by the evidence. And if this is, like, I don't know to what extent I should be a warrior cat's literalist when it comes to, like, reading the alliances on the front page or something like that. Like, that would be cool.
Obviously, there are more cats that are never mentioned, because simply you could not do that.
Everybody is either half clan or inbred. Like, those are the two options. Pick one. Or kitty pet, I guess.
Again, I would love to see this book rewritten where it didn't have to be a prequel and Blue Star could actually get, like, a decent life.
It would be so nice. She deserves so much better.
It's a tragedy, but it's not even a fun tragedy where interesting things happen along the way. Mm-hmm. It's just depressing. Like, it's a slow and steady decline downward from the second the blue kit opens her eyes.
Yeah, it's like, okay, so there was... when the, I think like maybe the lightest part of the book is when Bloofer wakes up and she has indigestion from some bad crow food, and that is sandwiched in between tumultuous childbirth, you know, dangerous childbirth, and Sweet Paw and Rose Paw might die from sickness.
Sweet Paw does die from sickness.
None of those are fun. None of those are fun. Can we talk a little bit about Sweet Paw? Cats literally cannot taste sweet. This is a fact I know.
Yes, they cannot. This is like...
It is not programmed into their mind. What is Sweet Paw's real name?
I would assume... I think... Okay. Honestly, it could be Sweet Paw because you would have a specific scent for something floral. Humans often describe floral scents as sweet. Uh-huh. I think that it would be something along that line in a floral sort of word.
Okay.
And referring to a smell. Or again, similar floral sort of word referring to kindness.
All right.
Such as how a human being can be sweet. It's definitely not the actual word sweet in cat language.
I was just going to also bring up the fact that Feather Whisker drew a picture in the dust with his claw at one point.
Yes.
To instruct Bloofer to be like, yes, these are the raspberry leaves. I'm a cat. And I was like, well, I think that's
actually entirely reasonable because a lot of, I'm going to get into plant identification for a second.
Please do.
Is a lot of plant identification is actually based off of leaf shape. So if you're if you've got a key, usually it's a dichotomous key. You've got a bunch of questions and the answer is either like yes or no or one option or the other. You pick one and you go to the next step.
That is what a dichotomous option is.
Yes. Which is why it's called a dichotomous key. Yeah. If you're doing that for trees and stuff, one of the very early questions it will ask you is about leaf shape.
Okay.
And like, is the leaf smooth? Is it lobed or is it jagged? And that narrows things down a lot. Hmm. There's also if it's the edges, the shape of the veins, stuff like that. But being able to draw out the shape of a leaf effectively is a very effective tool in being able to tell other people this is what you're looking for because that's something that they can see and that's something they can be like, okay, this matches up or this does not.
So medicine cats being able to do that does make sense then.
That is a completely reasonable... I don't know how... I think with... How they describe how moss is harvested with very fine claw control to avoid getting the root system in the dirt. Roots for as much as moss has roots. But I think that's actually a reasonable thing that medicine cats would probably be actually trained in.
I really liked that part.
There would also be that for claw control in, you would have to be able to harvest plants effectively. You would likely be able to need to tear open poppy seed pods in order to get poppy seeds out. You would need to be able to shred into specific portions to get their dosages right. I think medicine cats would have a very fine and dexterous command of their claws, and I think being able to draw a leaf in... the dirt is something that would be under their skill set, is something they would need to learn how to do.
That's really
interesting. Especially is if you get the plant wrong, you are threatening the life of another cat. If Bloofer were to get the wrong leaf in that situation, that would be that much more time that the medicine is not available. Mm-hmm. And so you need to get it right the first time.
That makes sense. All right, and that is going to be all of the time we have for this week's episode of Four Trees. This is the end of the interview with Silverleaf the Lizard Wizard, and next week, or possibly sooner, I don't know yet, we will be starting the new prophecy with my dear best friend in the whole world, Alex Turner. He's the one who mixed the theme for us, and it's so cool. I'm really excited for that. In the meantime, thank you, the listener, so much for listening to Four Trees, our Warrior Cats community podcast. Truthfully, I never expected there to be like any more than three people listening to this, and they were the three people I made this for. So the fact that there is a fourth person is really exciting to me, and I'm just happy that that's a thing. It's really cool. I've been your host, Spencer Grant. I'd like to thank the guest, Silverleaf, for joining us for the last little while. You have been an absolute pleasure to have. Four Trees is recorded live in front of an audience at Druids Hollow Studios here in Bristol. Our theme was composed and performed by Spencer Chopin-Grant and mixed by Alex Turner. Our graphics and 3D assets were designed by Spencer Diablo-Grant, and our editor is Spencer Pagliacci-Grant. The Warrior Cat series is written by Aaron Hunter and distributed by HarperCollins. Please support the official release. You can find us at the web at spencergrant.co.uk/4trees or at anchor.fm/4trees. Or you can find our YouTube uploads with auto-generated subtitles and audio visualizations on my YouTube channel, quote, Spencer Grant, unquote. Again, our podcast is available and will continue to be available on Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Music, and generally wherever you get your podcasts. I've been Spencer, you have been beautiful, and bye!